Siegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
I don't like Giddey as a player. I am trying to justify this. Like, I'm like, okay, be your own ombudsman. Challenge yourself.
Here's the thing. I appreciate you wanting to be your own ombudsman, as you brought it up earlier.
We'll require an account man, at least two copywriters, two artists, an ombudsman.
But I don't think you should have to do that. I think we have a friend of the show who can be the ombudsman when we need it, but his name is Boog.
That's my guy. Cubs. I love Boog.
So we'll ask Boog Shambi to be the ombudsman in this regard. Boog, are you with us?
Here comes the judge.
Are you available for ombudsmanship duty right now?
I am. I mean, but this is like a get in, get out type situation. But like, throw it at me and I'll bang the gap. And then I'm out. And I may not be gentle, you know.
Understood.
What's a fair number for Josh Giddey to get in free agency and for the Bulls to match?
I like Josh Giddey. I think for where they are, they probably just have to pay the money and get the guy. I just, as the ombudsman, I was just like double checking. The NBA starts like the end of October, right?
Yes. But free agency is going on right now.
Uh-huh.
Understood. Okay. I'm just asking.
I told you this was a bad idea.
The only good idea is to let me and John do our job and mediate this thing right here.
Boog, we did an hour of baseball.
I'm not implying anything.
I felt an implication, sir.
Look, I'm the public editor. That's what the ombudsman is. A public editor. I'm just asking.
All right, that's fair. So from a show content standpoint, you're not sure this is quality show content. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Oh, I think I got another call. I gotta tell you guys.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm Winston Wolf. We solve problems.
Good, we got one.
So I heard. I'm here to help. If my help's not appreciated, lots of luck, gentlemen. If I'm curt with you, it's because time is a factor. I think fast, I talk fast, and I need you guys to act fast if you want to get out of this. So pretty please, with sugar on top. Clean the car.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
Yes, there's a lot that needed to be discussed. By the way, I need a musician, and luckily my partner is one. In the People's Court theme, is that conga or bongo?
I heard bongo, but that's a good question now. Now you got me thinking, maybe it was conga. Damn it.
In my mind, I thought bongo. It sounded bongo, but you know.
Now I think it might be conga. I think.
Mango?
Not mango.
I'm trying, like, to me, it, like, the conga has a little bit of a thinner sound. The bongo has a little bit more of a.
Fuller, richer.
Yeah, like a rounder and more tonal. But I could just be talking completely out of my percussion behind.
Look, on this man. Honestly.
Yo.
The cymbal play and the either bongo or conga of the People's Court theme is absolutely amazing.
Like, they just don't do themes like they used to. I was watching 48 Hours the other day. Those themes with the steel drums. Oh, man. It's amazing. Yeah. An amazing score.
10 minutes to Wapner. Bongo sounds are higher in pitch and thinner in terms of the air that they move. The drums are smaller.
So that was bongo.
I think that was bongo. Bongo sounds are made with mostly fingers, while congas more often incorporate the entire hand.
Yeah. All right. Asked and answered, counselor. Well, I appreciate that.
Only with help from the internet.
From Wikipedia?
Yeah, my guy.
Somebody's reading Wikipedia.
Thank you. Our percussion player, Kalyan Patak, is a brilliant freaking percussion master who owns just about every percussion instrument you could possibly have. So that's the guy to talk to.
And they want to say the morning show's the cool show.
See?
If you just stumbled on our program after that sentence, I don't know what to tell you. You don't think it's cool.
It's not.
It's not. No, it's true. It's true. I mean, David Haw has his own television network. That's pretty cool.
It is.
You know what I mean? Chicago right. Haw Sports Network.
And now everyone
He's
can
also
see
in the Indiana Football Hall of Fame.
Damn right he is.
We're not in a single.
Put him in the Hall of Fame. Put him in the Hall.
What Hall of Fame is it again? You sure it's football?
It's not. Maybe it's just Indiana High School. I don't want to screw it up.
Not according to Stacey King.
It's in a Hall of Fame. Oh.
Not according to Stacey King.
It's baseball
King.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Stacey thinks it's a
Didn't
baseball
Didn't know he could
Hall
throw like that. Didn't know he had an arm like that.
I didn't know he could swing like that. Oh, man.
Anyway.
Any Hoozles.
Yes, they're the cool show.
Yeah.
All right. So
you've been on the stump for Matthew Boyd, National League All-Star.
Yes. I think that he deserves an opportunity to pitch and represent. So to me, the Cubs All-Stars are Pecro Armstrong, Kyle Tucker, and I'm hoping that it'll be Matthew Boyd.
I think Carson Kelly is probably going to get there as the second catcher. He's been hitting the ball very well over the last couple weeks again.
Cubs catchers have done, whether it's Amaya or Carson Kelly, mm-hmm. and quite honestly, ever since they called up, why am I blanking on his name? Reese McGuire.
Yep.
He's actually been fine too.
Mm-hmm. But we'll see about the others. But Matthew Boyd, for sure. You add in last night. Do you have a guess as to where Matthew Boyd is amongst National League starting pitchers for ERA, for earned run average?
I'm guessing he's in the top 10.
He's number 6 with a 2.65 ERA. That's better than Freddie Peralta. It's better than Mackenzie Gore. Better than Robbie Ray. And by the way, Spencer Schwellenbach just got hurt. Fractured elbow for the Braves, Spencer Schwellenbach, who I think was also going to make the All-Star team. So, but Matthew Boyd is there in terms of ERA, in terms of walks plus hits per innings pitched. He's 8th with a 1.08. My favorite stat to look at for him is the strikeout to walk ratio. He's 10th in strikeouts to walk ratio among all starting pitchers. He's been absolutely terrific. And here's the other reason that I think Matthew Boyd is going to be on the All-Star team representing the Cubs pitching staff. I think he's the only one.
Hmm.
I don't think there's any other Cubs pitcher that's going to make it. I don't think Shota has pitched enough.
What about Pomerantz?
I don't think setup men.
It's rare.
It's very, very rare.
They have to be like.
And Palencia has been real good of late. I guess there's an outside shot at Palencia. If you want to look at the overall numbers, but the saves are obviously not there for Palencia. So, I mean, maybe somebody could make that case, but there's a bunch in the National League, whether it's Robert Suarez of the Padres who's going to get there. You know, there's quite a few. Maybe it is going to be Palencia, but because his ERA is low and his WHIP is extremely low, and he's a fairly new closer with the 9 saves, so maybe he's got a chance. But setup men don't usually make it. Like Brad Keller is probably the best Cubs setup man option, but Alex Kuhn did the research. Setup men to make the All-Star team.
Brad wants Kuhn to get their wish.
And a lot of them ended up as closers. Ryan Pressly when he was a setup man. Josh Hader when he was a setup man. Joe Mantiply of Arizona. There's one. That's a straight up lefty setup guy. Caleb Thielbar, your table is ready. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
Dylan Betances as a setup man for multiple years with the Yankees. So that's interesting. Andrew Miller 1 year in 2017 after Cleveland had made the World Series.
Man, was he a weapon for like 4 years.
Yeah, he was
a weapon. Yeah,
so like just the most dominant setup men or they become closers.
Right. And some of them are setup men, but like Miller was a bulk reliever every once in a while and kind of reinvented the bullpen, did Francona, with the way that he used Andrew Miller. So I don't think there's anybody. So I think the first place Chicago Cubs are going to have a pitcher on the All-Star team, and it will be Matthew Boyd.
Right. Okay. Well, I'd be okay with that. By the way, update, Milwaukee won again. They won game one of their doubleheader with the Mets, 7-2. They are now 48-37 on the season.
Man.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Mizorowski's going tonight. So that might be bad for the Mets and for the Cubs.
Mizorowski's such an interesting dude. Like he found control late in his minor league career and here at the big leagues through some very specific and innovative pitching practices and training exercises that a lot of teams are examining. Milwaukee is on to something with the way that they have helped Mizorowski find control, like these certain eye exercises and different focus points they had him look at. It's a much discussed these days around MLB.
I dig that. Let's get back to Boyd for a second, though, because we've had some people talk about him. This is our guy, Nico, when we asked him about playing behind Matthew Boyd.
It's fun. I mean, he's a guy who prepares and attacks the game with a lot of purpose. I think we talked about this before, but something really interesting about him is he did his whole elbow rehab on his own. Like, he wasn't affiliated with the team through that process, which is pretty unique. And it takes a lot of discipline, but I think he also created a lot of confidence for himself out of it by doing it all by himself and figuring out his own resources and attacking things on his own, to where he just created this whole system and self-belief through doing that process on his own, that I think he's really had a great career, but entered a really special part of his career coming out of that surgery into the second half last year with Cleveland and now with us. He's in a good, really good place.
I mean, when we talked to Matthew Boyd, which was a great conversation.
He's awesome. He's super easy to root for.
Yeah, he is. And his dad is a Cub fan who's been coming to some games, and just he's so grateful and so kind of serene when you talk to him. We talked to him a little bit about that rehab. He was throwing to high school catchers. He was going, like, grabbing high school catchers in Ohio and just kind of trying to work on it as best he could, all on his own. So pretty amazing. And I think last night helped a little bit. There's a little buzz about him. Not that it was a revenge game against Cleveland, but I think we'll get talked about a little bit on the TBS broadcast tonight as well, of, like, you know, Boyd being so good and the former Cleveland pitcher. So I think he's a lock, Mr. Validation.
So Craig Counsell had some thoughts on him too that I think that you will enjoy. Like, he went into great detail about Boyd and why they signed him.
The signing of Boyd was really just a bet on, like, is he going to stay healthy? I mean, he's had injury problems, unfortunately, for the last really 5 years of his career. When you sign starting pitching, you know, it's innings. You know, you want obviously quality, but innings is also very, very important. And that's what he's done so well this year so far, is deliver innings. And then you put the quality has never been an issue with Matthew Boyd. When he's been on the mound, he's been a good starting pitcher. So it was really, can he stay healthy? And we thought kind of he was coming into this window where he really should be healthy. Some of the stuff was kind of out of his control, but he had a serious arm injury that set him out, you know, like kind of a year and a half, the Tommy John, that really, you know, hurts pitchers' careers in terms of missing a bunch of time. But he's healthy. He's pitching like we saw him pitch last year in Cleveland, like we really expected him to pitch if he was healthy.
So, yeah, I mean, it's great stuff. And he's right. As long as he's been healthy, he was real good in Detroit and then real good in Cleveland in that small sample. And maybe he's found a way to stay healthy. He has so far. I bet he gets it. Kenny Rosenthal of The Athletic came out with his projected All-Stars. Among his starting pitchers are Zach Wheeler, Mackenzie Gore, Freddy Peralta, Robbie Ray, Paul Skeens, Logan Webb, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Chris Sale, who is hurt right now. He doesn't have Matthew Boyd on the team.
Well, maybe Matthew Boyd can take Chris Sale's spot.
Maybe so.
I understand, because there are people inside the mob and people who've texted. I think Seiya has an argument, but unfortunately, it's a glut at that position. Like, there's a lot of DH types that have had a good year, but Seiya's 860 OPS is damn impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Slugging 550 on the year, giving up a little bit of average for power, giving up a little bit of on base for power. It's been the right choice, and he's been excellent for them.
Two DHs usually make it. It's Shohei Ohtani, obviously. Kyle Schwarber's had a beastly season.
Yeah, he hit another one today.
It's just remarkable. One time, and future Cub? Kyle Schwarber? Huh? What? It's a topic for another day. Let's talk about it.
You just drop that right then and there?
Huh? What? Now what would you say?
Now how much would you pay? Yeah. Kyle Schwarber, by the way, if you were wondering, geez,
yeah,
this guy's got an on-base of 382.
Yeah, I mean, he crushes lefties now.
26 home runs and an OPS of 919.
He's worked his ass off and wears armor now, so he feels safe, and he has a mantra. You know what his mantra is against lefties? prepare to die. That's what he says to himself before he goes in there against lefties and stands in there strong and brave, and it's freaking working for that guy. Yeah.
I like it. All right, you got to go.
I do. I got to go pick up the Roopster.
All right, go do that.
I got to go check on Todd Frazier. I got to go.
Got to go check on him. But when we return as a show,
you take over.
John Morosi is going to be here, and we're going to find out what he thinks about Matthew Boyd's candidacy to be on the All-Star team, what he thinks about the Cubs and these red-hot Brewers. They won't go away. All of that is next here on The Score.
See Matt Spiegel's son, Ruben, over there.
Hey, John Boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
Here's John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network insider.
I think that this news on Robert, the White Sox have been waiting for him to reestablish his market value, and you need two things for that: health and production. And right now, Robert candidly has neither of those things. He just hasn't played well enough. I tend to think it's an unlikely situation that he's going to get moved at the deadline.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy, I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me, it means the world.
Sources confirm that fun.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We're going to talk with John Morosi in just a minute. We're going to establish contact with him, and then he'll be on the show. Spiegs went to go pick up Ruben because it's like a little bit of time where he can get to where he needs to get to before they're like, hey, your kid has to leave here. So he's going to go pick up his kid, which is what we're all about here on the Spiegel and Holmes show. Can I just tell you that tonight's Cubs game against the Guardians, we're going to have the only local call of that. ESPN's got the game tonight, and I don't have a problem with ESPN's coverage, but it might be a good time for you to take Pat and Ron out for a walk. I like to do that on a nice summer night. It's very enjoyable. We'll have the pregame starting with Zach at 6:30. First pitch will be at 7:05, and we are the only local broadcast for tonight's game, which can be heard on The Score and on the Southwood Airlines Cubs Radio Network. By the way, I had a little issue that Southwest helped me fix over the last couple of days, and I had to make two phone calls over there, and both of the customer service representatives were outstanding, and they were fun, and they actually like were like Southwest and the flight attendants, because they tend to have a little bit more fun than on other airlines. But shout out to Southwest, because they were super helpful and got things accomplished for me and made it super simple for an idiot like me. Spiegs is off to go pick up his son. It's Lawrence here with you until 6 o'clock. John Morosi now joining me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. John, how you doing?
Great, Lawrence. How are you? For the benefit of our Twitch viewers, I've got my Oak Park River Forest High School baseball hat on. How about this? Go Huskies. I was able to watch one of their games earlier on this season. Thanks to Coach Campbell for sending this along. So I feel like a true Chicagoan here today.
So are these from your peeps that are still here? They hooked you up with this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm connected now to amateur ball. Of course, I saw Nazareth Academy for a day and got a chance to see Jaden Fowski play there. Great, great player. And then, of course, now I've got this. I've got my guy and stay right in the Midwest. Go to Notre Dame. I get it. But as long as they're playing, that's the important thing.
Yes, I 100% agree with you on that. Let's talk about the Cubs. The Cubs are still in first place in the National League Central, although the Brewers are on their way, and we'll get to them in a minute. This Cubs team didn't have a really good June, but they did get Shota Imanaga back, which is a strong point for them. I'd love to know, when you're looking at the National League and looking specifically at the Central, how you see the Cubs now that you have a half of a season to kind of, as a sample, to look at them.
Still a good lineup, maybe not as dominant as they were early on in the season, Lawrence, but still a good lineup. Phenomenal bullpen, maybe the best in baseball right now based on how they're performing, and a rotation that needs work. That's what I see. Still an above average lineup, phenomenal bullpen, and a rotation that's honestly a work in progress. And actually, I'll be at Wrigley tomorrow, so if you're there, I'll see you.
Right on.
We've got tomorrow is our game on MLB Network, Guardians Cubs, so we're excited about that. So that, of course, that's the national MLB broadcast. As you know, locally you'll watch it on Marquee, but we're sharing the images from Wrigley to the whole baseball world, which is exciting. But I'm curious to see how Horton looks, and I think he's a real swing guy in this rotation, because I'm a believer that they probably need to get one legit impact starter between now and the end of the month if they're really going to win a series, let's say, in the postseason. Because I think they can probably, and I'm saying probably, still win a division without upgrading their rotation, but certainly I don't see a path for them to winning series without a deeper and better rotation. And the reason why I only say probably, Lawrence, is that the rotation has become a real strength for the team just up the road in Milwaukee. Whether it's Chad Patrick or Mizorowski, who comes in throwing a billion miles an hour, they're feeling good about themselves. And I think that the Cubs had a chance for a brief moment, Lawrence, earlier on in the season to put some real distance between themselves and the Brewers. And it looked that way for a moment.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, Pat Murphy's club and Craig Council's old club got really going again. And so I think the Cubs are in a real battle, and the Brewers have this youth and this energy, and Christian Yelich is playing great, and Bryce Durang is an excellent two-way player. Jackson Churio is a great two-way player. That Brewers team is not going anywhere.
One of the advantages that I feel like the Cubs will have over the Brewers is that the Brewers never really go for it at the trade deadline, and they have a super strong organization that allows them to be competitive and win the division, sometimes even without having to do that. Is there any thought that the Brewers themselves could be a real player in the trade market this year?
You know, it's a great question. They have, I believe, the type of prospects that would allow them to be active, but let's be clear. They won the division last year, and they're still a good team now because they didn't trade Jackson Churio and they didn't trade Bryce Durang. And they brought in players like William Contreras, when that trade opportunity came to them. So that's what I see with them, is that to me, a trade for them, Lawrence, in a strange way, is almost like last year not trading Willy Adames at the deadline, right? Because in some ways, whether it's the Josh Hader trade a couple of years ago or other moves they've made with guys on expiring contracts, Devin Williams, for example, they trade him with 1 year left before free agency. They trade Corbin Burns with 1 year left before free agency. That's the normal procedure for the Brewers. And so you're right. I would say, do I expect them to take a huge swing in the trade market? Probably not. Could I see them bringing back someone like an Adrian Hauser from the White Sox, who was briefly a Brewer, or actually for more than a brief amount of time a Brewer? That's more of the flavor that I could see. Maybe a Herman Marquez from the Rockies. But do I think they'll be the A number one going for the biggest guy out there? No, because that's just not the way they do things. And it's generally speaking, Lawrence, it has been to their benefit. Meanwhile, as we're talking about this, on the flip side of things, the Cubs need to be the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean they need to be the big market team in the third largest city in our country and make a massive trade, or at least an impactful one, at the end of July to really address what is their clearest need, which is a legitimate guy to start game one or game two of a postseason series. That's what the Cubs need, and that's exactly the kind of move they should make before July 31st.
Who makes sense for them? Who are the pitchers that you would identify and say, this would be a nice fit for the Cubs?
I think I would start with Sandy Alcantara as being a name that I would watch carefully. And the other name that I would say should be right in the same conversation is Chris Bubich from the Royals. To me, the Royals have trended in the direction of being a more obvious seller. And again, Bubich is the kind of guy, because he's under contract for 2026, or at least for salary arbitration. He's not a free agent. So he's the kind of guy who's going to command a major price tag. That's the kind of guy who's probably going to be outside of the scope of the Brewers, but should not be outside the scope of the Cubs. And that's what I'm seeing there. Now, does that mean that they give up someone like a Ben Brown? Again, You're trying to win right now in a really competitive National League. And if Ben Brown can't help you win Major League games right now, you have to at least consider the possibility of moving him. And again, that'd be a hard thing to do, but I think that's the kind of thing that I would imagine the Cubs have to consider. If he's not on your Major League roster now and you're really going for it, you hired Craig Counsell to go for it. And now you've got a chance to finish ahead of Council's former team and act like a large market team. For me, Chris Bubich would be the announcement that the Cubs are really serious about winning in 2025.
John Morosi joining us here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show. Spiegs went to go pick up Ruben, so I'm landing the plane for the rest of the show and talking baseball with John. Who are the Cubs all-stars from your point of view?
It's a great question. I think that Tucker is for sure for me. Suzuki, yes. PCA, yes. On the pitching side, take anybody out of the bullpen, right? I mean, you could make a case for Palencia if you wanted to. You can make a case for Pomeranz, who's been unbelievable. So there's any number of guys out of the pen. I don't see a starting pitcher being an all-star.
I want Matthew Boyd in that game, John, because yeah, I look at his numbers.
Okay. That's maybe the one. So I would say Matthew Boyd. I'll backtrack. I'll say Boyd is the one guy in the rotation that I could say that you could put in the All-Star game. So I correct myself there. I would say Boyd is the one starter. You could sort of have any variety of relievers that you could make a case for, but probably the three position players with a legitimate shot, I would say, is PCA, Tucker, and Suzuki. And yes, Matthew Boyd, I think he has been one of the best acquisitions that any team has made. And again, you look at this team, and I realize I just said, hey, they got to make a big move. They've made some pretty big moves. PCA acquired in a trade, okay? Tucker acquired in a trade. Palencia acquired in a trade long time ago. Boyd acquired in free agency, a very smart signing. The bullpen almost entirely smart acquisitions from elsewhere. So I realize that the front office of the Cubs has at times been criticized, but there are a lot of fan bases right now, Lawrence, who would love to have a front office, Jed, Carter Hawkins, Andrew Bassett and the group, who have made moves like this that have resulted in some pretty smart acquisitions of impactful guys, including Boyd, who, again, I think is, to your point, a deserving all-star and one of the better dollar-for-dollar starting pitching signings any team made last winter.
John, you've covered so many guys that are getting ready to be free agents, and the team that they're on desperately wants to sign him. Here we are with Kyle Tucker, who is having an all-star year. I think he'll finish top five in MVP voting in the National League. Obviously, Cubs fans and the Cubs organization would like to have him back. How likely is it that he would sign an extension without going to market?
Unlikely. I wouldn't say impossible, but unlikely, which admittedly is what I would have probably said about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on April 5th before things changed there and he ended up being able to sign long-term there with the Toronto Blue Jays. I would be surprised because now we're almost into the second half of the season. And by the way, you want to talk about one of the great traditions of All-Star Game media coverage, Lawrence, will be in Atlanta and the reporter from who covers the Braves will step up. The reporter who covers the Giants will step up. The reporter who covers the Yankees. Hey, Kyle, what do you think about Atlanta? What do you think about San Francisco?
What do you think about Boston?
What do you think about Boston? Exactly. So all of these different cities, okay? So prepare yourself, Chicagoans and Cubs fans, to just, and if you don't want to hear it, just, I don't know, delete X for a couple days around the All-Star game. But you're going to hear your guy getting talked about and linked to every other team. It's just going to happen. Sometimes he leaves, and sometimes he stays. Again, this you want to talk about wind the clock back to last year and Juan Soto and all the same things were said about him, okay, when he was at the All-Star game and everybody's talking about where he might go. So I think it's important to brace yourself, but also not give it too much credence, and yet realize at the same time that usually, when a major free agent name gets to July the 2nd and is having an MVP year and he doesn't have an extension, he usually goes to free agency. And at that point in time, it's anybody's guess, right? It's, you know, Juan Soto loved the Yankees until he didn't.
Yeah.
And so it's impossible to guess where things could go. But I do think that Kyle Tucker, there's a pretty strong chance that he will be a free agent in November.
Inside the studio, I've got a couple TVs going, and one of them's on MLB Network. And they had flashed the wild card standings, and there are the Tampa Bay Rays. John, what is the contingency for the Rays making the playoffs and having home playoff games?
We don't know yet. And Ken Rosenthal has reported on this a bit in recent weeks. MLB is certainly aware of it. The players there are aware of it. I think this is where it becomes interesting, right, Lawrence? Because they've got a bit of a home field advantage. They've played really well. And they're in the conversation there for a postseason berth. Outdoor baseball in Tampa would actually be a beautiful environment, I think, in October. In terms of the weather, now the weather that's what I'm saying here. The seating is a challenge. Now, could you bring in temporary seating? How would that look? We played. All I know, Lawrence, is we played a Major League Baseball game in the middle of a cornfield. We've played a Major League Baseball game on a U.S. military installation in North Carolina that I was at. We have been to a lot of different places.
The Rickwood game, we've had that too.
Yes, exactly. Move it to Rickwood. That'd be a great idea. So there's a lot of different ways that this could go. And I don't love the notion of moving it to Miami. I wouldn't love that. But the reason beyond just the fans here and wanting people to experience playoff baseball is this makes a real impact on a couple things. Number one, the postseason shares, right? Playoff revenue, ticket revenue is then shared between the owners and the players. And so eventually the players are saying, wait a minute, if you can sell three times as many seats somewhere else, that's money that eventually will get to us, and we want you to sell those seats as opposed to selling it in a smaller venue. The other piece is, and Ken wrote about this, is that playoff tickets, the deeper you go in the playoffs, tend to have a higher and higher percentage that go to sponsors, MLB adjacent people, networks, etc., that all of a sudden the true fans get a little bit of a less of an opportunity to buy those seats. And so that to me, Lawrence, is a real question, and I don't have an answer right now. But there, and we may have to wait and see where it all lands. But the Rays have a lot of very loyal fans that you would hope can drive to be able to watch this team play. But under the circumstances, temporary stands. I don't know. Play it across the street at Raymond James. I don't know. That probably not that option, Lawrence. But I'm open to any idea that allows fans to enjoy playoff baseball.
I want the games in Montreal. That's where I want.
I do too. I do too.
That would be dope. John, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Lawrence. Happy 4th, and go Huskies here as well. Thank you.
I love the representation. Look at the representation from John Morosi. He knows. He's a local dude. He gets it. And we're glad that he likes to hang out here and be with us. All right. Texas says, what's going on in Tampa? Well, remember they had a hurricane and their stadium fell apart. Major League Baseball doesn't want them playing in a minor league complex for the playoffs. So the options are all weird and limited, where go play in the Marlins stadium. Tampa is not close to Miami. It is not at all. Maybe you play the games in Atlanta. I don't know. It's a very strange thing, but they definitely don't. They don't have a place that is playoff worthy of them playing in as it stands right now. When we come back, Tanny has been sitting on this piece of sound for what, 2 weeks or so?
At least, yeah.
But it's Michael Jordan stuff, right?
Yeah, it's a great Michael Jordan story of him taking his pettiness to new heights.
Well, we love Petty Jordan. It's an awesome thing, and we will share it with the people next here on The Score.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about. What's your best MJ story?
Oh, man.
I got a good story. I don't know if I should tell it on the radio, but I get a call from Michael. Meet me at Sunset Ridge.
Never forget. Almost always a Michael Jordan fan.
This is a true story.
Michael comes over and he says to me and Red, let's go see a movie. Casino's playing. Well, he really wanted to see Casino.
All cash. And next thing you know, we got $1 million cash. We're playing spades.
And it was amazing because I'm like, man, this is Michael Jordan. It's like a glow around him.
Jordan hits the shot. I turned around and
I can't even really describe the next like 6 to 7 minutes of play, yo.
And I remember him walking off the court.
He was like, don't ever talk trash to Black Jesus.
Here on the Spiegel and Holmes show, we love petty Michael Jordan stories. And luckily for us, there are tons of them. Tons of stories of Michael Jordan just being as petty as possible. And my hope is that when he joins NBC as a broadcaster, that he shares as many of them as he feels fit.
And it's not even just the petty stories that I enjoy, but it's when you hear about Jordan just taking what the sanctity that we have of a professional sporting event, whether it's postseason or regular season, an NBA game, just taking that seriousness and just like, nah, I'm on my own tier right now, playing at my own level. I'm going to close my eyes during a free throw. I'm going to bet on the Dunkin' Donuts race. You know, I'm going to miss a free throw just so I can say I had 45 points against you, you know, yeah. That type of stuff. A game within the game stuff.
This story falls into that category. You're not going to believe this, or maybe you will, because this is how Jordan rolls.
This is Peter Gilbert, who's the director of Hoop Dreams, who did some work on the side, and this is from the Sports Consigliere's podcast.
But I mean, I have a great Jordan story. So I worked with a director named Michael Apted, who was a really great filmmaker. Did James Bond movies, you know, all kinds of stuff. And so he was doing a film in Chicago, and I was in the scene. It's called Blink, and it was with Madeline Stowe. And there's a scene where it's at the old Chicago Stadium.
If there is anything beautiful in this hellhole of a city, I would love to see it.
The scene is basically a blind woman and her best friend. Her best friend is describing to the blind woman how great Michael Jordan is as a player during the game. I'm underneath the basket and I've got a huge camera with me, you know, not the normal camera. Yeah. And as they're warming up, Jordan comes over to me and he goes, so what's the deal? And I go, you know, you're in a movie. We're making a movie. And he goes, oh, am I getting paid? And I go, yeah, yeah. Do you know how much? I said, I heard 30 grand. And he goes, oh, what do they want me to do? And I said, dunk, because basically they just really wanted a couple dunks. Yeah. So he said, right before the game started, he walked over to me and he said, just stay on the rim for the first three shots. And he just came down.
Jordan! Yeah. Oh, Scotty and Michael playing. You want it? Who got it? I got it. You got it. Slam dunk.
I'm not kidding. That whole game, underneath the basket, he would shout to me what he was going to do. And Alonzo Mourning, like, it, you know, started talking trash to him, which was not, the trash was hilarious. It was the old Charlotte Hornets. So it was, you know, Larry Johnson and his grandmama days. And all, you know, so you can imagine the banter and all that stuff. And, but Mourning really started talking trash to him. So he was inbounding the ball under the basket and he turned to me and he's on camera. He turns to me and he goes, I'm going to throw the ball into Pippen. And he's screaming it. So that Mourning hears it, and Pippen's going to throw it back to me, and I'm going to dunk on that.
Excuse me. Right, right.
And sure enough, that was the play, and that's the shot in the movie.
Pippen gets it to Jordan. Michael challenges it.
Right, control yourself, all right?
Get up, and he makes me mean.
Oh, you're making me nuts. I can barely see the guy. All right.
Michael Jordan. Look at his tongue out over Alonzo Mourning. Yes! And after he comes down, he says, yahoo! Oh, I thought he bit his tongue. Oh, man.
Oh, Michael! Hey, look at me!
A testament of absolute greatness right there.
And I will say, if you've got Blink on DVD or Blu-ray, check it out for that scene alone. It's a fine, you know, crime thriller, but like, our mind, when we think about, like, you know, we've have seen those Jordan games like on YouTube and a graininess through like someone, you know, digitizing a VHS. But when you get to see
on film,
game footage on film, especially from that game, March 12, 1993, which I think is like the first thing they shot for that movie. That was the first thing they did. Jordan scores 52 against the Hornets. So
I love that he just was like, oh, you guys are here to see me? I'm gonna put on a show. I got him. See this guy right here? See this bleeper right here? I'm going to dunk on him. Hey, Alonzo, did you hear that? I'm going to dunk on you. I'm going to pass the ball to Scotty. Scotty's going to give it back to me, and I'm going to dunk on you. Dunks on Alonzo.
Poor Alonzo got dunked on in front of Madeline Stowe and Morgan Metcalf.
Yeah, man. That's not going to help your Hollywood cred. Awesome show today. We had a good time, and we're glad that you were here for that ride of a show. The Cubs game today is not on Marquee. It's on ESPN. We've got the only local call, so make sure that you check that out on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Pregame will start in about a half an hour on that. Thanks to John Morosi for being on the show. We appreciate him for being with us. Thanks to our guy Jason Leisure for being on the show. And thanks to Zach Harper for bringing a lot of fun. Spiegs is on his way to go pick up Ruben right now. He'll be back tomorrow, and so will I. Thank you so much for the love and support. You show this show every single day. We will try to repay the favor tomorrow starting at 2 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Spiegel at Home. See you then.
All right, we apologize, ladies and gentlemen, for that presentation.